All right, so I think I'm going to try to start on time. I think that the people who come on time deserve that respect. And so I'll start on time. I'm going to introduce myself, since I didn't want somebody to introduce me. My name is Heshy Billet. I used to be a rabbi in America. I retired, and now I live in Israel. That's the introduction, okay? All right. About rabbis in America, by the way, it is said, V'salachta lavonenu ki ravhu. So take that any way you want. Okay. So you have a page in front of you. I put it there because I thought it would be easier than making you, I don't know if they had chumashim with Megillas Esther and then make you turn this page and that page and make you crazy turning pages. What? I don't know where the pages are. I have no idea where they are. I think they were at the entrance.
I'll bring more.
You know, it's the OU, they do not do enough kosher supervision here, so they can only afford to make a few pages. The OU is short on money. In case you didn't.
From the New York City Board of Ed. It's very.
Don't laugh. I come from New York City. So Board of Ed, they're all malachim there in the New York City public school system. Very pro Israel. Very proactive.
Very nice, but they don't have.
You have to look at people through rose colored glasses, right? You know.
Really.
Well, they're.
I was going to say,
you know, I support the occupation and the all the war crimes that are committed by Israel.
With Hillary
the,
and pro Biden and.
Hillary, I'm not making any political comments. I'm not telling you my preferences, but Hillary Clinton has been very supportive of Israel in this operation. And so has Biden until recently.
I know.
Until recently.
Yeah, that's amazing.
You know. Now he's beginning to read the propaganda and fall into the traps. So what can you do? Whatever. Anyway, it doesn't. Oh, I can't believe you're here. Okay. So this class is. I called it, I think, Yosef and Megillas Esther. So I want to start with a midrash in Esther Rabbah. And it says, "Boneh shel Rachel nisan shaveh ugedula san shaveh." I hope you don't mind my Ashkenazis, but I speak a fluent Hebrew, Sfardit, but I can't learn in Sfardit. I can only learn in Ashkenazis. It's just a matter of what I'm used to. So the children of Rachel, their miracles are equal. Their greatness is equal. And the two children of Rachel that we refer to, the Bnei Shel Rachel, are Yosef and Mordechai and Esther, right? Mordechai and Esther were from the tribe of Binyamin, right? Shemini Hayab Shushana Birah Shmo Mordechai Bin Yair Bin Shemi Bin Kish, and you assume Esther likely was from the same tribe, and Yosef was the son of Rachel. So Yosef and Mordechai and Esther have Mordechai and Esther and Yosef have something in common, and that is that they are descendants of Rachel. Yosef, an immediate son, and Mordechai and Esther, generations later. Mordechai ben Yair ben Shimi ben Kish ish Yemini, right? A man of Benjamin. So, the greatest bulk of this class, I thought was original. When I prepared a Chumash class in my synagogue in the Young Israel of Woodmere, it had hit me that the story of Yosef had the Sarha Mashkim and the Sarha Ofim, the two officers of Paro who had been accused of disloyalty to the king. As you know, one of them, the Sarha Ofim, the butler, the baker, was hanged and the butler was spared. And then, you know, and then I was thinking Achashverosh had two, Bigson and Seresh. And then I was thinking that right after the story of the butler and the baker and the Paro story, you know, Paro was dreaming, right? And Paro had difficulty falling asleep. He fell asleep, rather, but he was troubled by his dreams. And I was thinking that in the Megillah, Balailahu Nodidosh Nasa Melech Achashverosh has trouble sleeping and he needs bedtime stories to help put him back to sleep. He could have used a rabbi's sermon, it would have worked a lot quicker. But In any event, so I said, gee, you know, these stories are interesting. My wife, Rookie, when she was in, she went to Brooklyn College, and they had a special program at TIW, led by Rabbi Feivelson, Zichrono Livracha, Teachers Institute, and it was at Stern College. And she did not go to Stern, but she did go to the TI. And at TI, there was a gentleman who helped run the program in TI. His name was Gabi Cohn, right? Dr. Gabi Cohn, Rabbi Dr. Gabi Cohn. And I came across a monograph, an article written by Gabi Cohn, in which what I thought were my original ideas, I mean, in my mind, they were original, but Gabi Cohn wrote a whole article about this years before I came up with this genius comparison. There's nothing? Are you sure?
No, you think you think had a really great
you think
art.
Anyone
knew, I had a I thought was amazing, and my father said, "Oh, it's from the Chida." I'm like, "Okay."
Well, I'll tell you, I had a Rebbe in BTA, Yeshiva University High School for Boys in Brooklyn, Rabbi Dardek Olav Shalom, and I, you know, I would have said that Albert Einstein was the one who came up with the idea of E=mc². But Rabbi Dardek said, "No, no, Chazal knew all that. Chazal knew everything." You know, Chazal, I asked him, did Chazal know how to make an airplane? He said, sure. So I said, so why didn't they? He said, because they knew it wasn't the right time yet. That was Rabbi Dardek, by the way, had a tremendous influence on us. He had a bigger influence on my wife than he had on me. But he was a wonderful teacher. Okay, so let's get to the class. So on the right side of the line, you have the Yosef story. And on the left side of the line, you have the Mordechai and Esther story. So I start with exactly what I mentioned before. On the right side, the butler and the baker committed some sort of sin to the king of Egypt. Right? Vayiktsof Paro al Shnei Sarisav. Paro gets angry at his two eunuchs. Right, a lot of the Saris is often the assistant to a king, but in the reigns of the kings of those days, a lot of their associates were eunuchs. Vayiktsof Paro al Shnei Sarisav al Sah Hamashkim ve al Sah Haofim, and he gets angry at them. But for whatever reason, they have dreams, and Yosef tells them that the Sar HaMashkim is going to be the butler is going to be restored to his position, and the baker is going to be hanged. And sure enough, at Sar HaOfim Tala, the baker is hanged. Okay, if you look to the left, again you have something similar. Bayomim Ahem Mordechai Yosef B'Shar HaMelech. Again, two eunuchs, Bigson and Seresh, Mishomrei Asaf, Vayevakshu Lishloch Yad B'Melech Achashverosh, and they are plotting to harm the king. And in those days, harming meant to assassinate the king. In the end, what happens to Bigson and Seresh? Like the Sar HaOfim and the Sar HaMashkim, Vayetlu Shneihem Aloitz. If you pursue this a little bit further, the analogy is not just of two servants. Bigson and Seresh were the baker and the butler. If you look at the pasuk in Daniel underneath this, Vayeman lahem amelech dvar yom biyomo. This is a story of when Nebuchadnezzar finds that there are several young lads from the exile of Jerusalem in his court, and he pays attention to them. And this is, of course, the beginning of the story of Daniel, of Daniel. It says, "Vayiman lahem melech dvar yom yomo mipat bag hamelech umiyein mishtav legadlam." Right, shalosh shanim. He gets them pat bag hamelech, and Rashi says, "What's bag?" Bag, he says, is lechem. So, what's big son? Big son is the guy who makes the pat bag hamelech. He is the baker. Right, that's what big son is. Bag son. Right, bag notain. He gives bread to the king. All right. Benatati mitaretz chem bito yorel malkosh viasafta doganecha v'tiroshcha v'yitzarecha. What's Tirosh? Tirosh is wine. It's made out of grapes. So Bixan equals Sar HaOfim, and Seresh equals the man who gives the Tirosh to the king, the Sar HaMashkim. Right? I think it's a reasonable, it's not an incredible Chiddush. By the way, Gabi Cohn does not have this in the article, so this part is actually original. Bixan and Seresh being equal to the Sar HaMashkim and the Sar HaOfim. Okay, then we go to item number two on the right side. There it says, Vayhimi Kate Shnosayim Uparo Cholem. Vine Omeid Aliyor, right? He's standing by the riverside and he sees the seven fat cows, the seven lean cows, the seven fat sheaves, the seven lean sheaves. And he sees the lean things swallowing the fat things, right? Vayhiba Boker Vatipa Emrucho. As it turns out, it was a nightmare. He's very frightened. You know, you have a lot of rabbinic drushes as why he was very frightened. You know, he's the fat cow, and you know the lean cow are the people of Egypt, and fat cows can be swallowed by lean cows. But the point is that he was affected by the dream. Vatipa emrucho. He's shaking. And Achashverosh, he looked to the left. Belailahu nodedosh nasamelch. The king was having difficulty sleeping, and he had these dreams. He had these dreams, and he was also troubled by them. Look at item number three. Right, and what happens? The king has them right, and continuing down further. Vayomer aleihem number four. By Yosef, by Yom Hashlishi, Yosef said to them on the third day, and you have that by Yosef, you have the third day mentioned, and number five, you have the story of the wife of Potiphar, who says to Yosef, Yom Yom, she keeps repeating to Yosef day after day, she's trying to seduce him, right? So you look here, at item number three, a cross by Esther. Achar hadvarim ha'ela, the same phrase, achar hadvarim ha'ela, right? And so you have the achar hadvarim ha'ela, and the anger of the king is about the Sar HaMashkim and the Sar HaOfim is aroused. And then it says in Esther, Vayhi bayom ha'shlishi v'tilbash Esther malchut, the third day, you have the third day by Esther, like you had the third day by Yosef. And then Vayhi b'davram elav yom yom. This is about Haman and Mordechai. They're telling Mordechai again and again to bow to Haman. And when do they tell it to him? Yom yom, right? And lo shama alehem. So you have something similar again. You have the wife of Potiphar repeating day after day, trying to seduce Yosef, and he doesn't listen to her. He runs away. And you have the people trying to persuade Mordechai that he should bow to Haman. And he didn't listen to them. Okay, go to the next thing. Ultimately, Paro is very impressed by Yosef's ability to interpret dreams. Vayasar Paro is tabato. He removes his ring, vayitain, and he gives it to the al yad Yosef, to the hand of Yosef. And what does it say by Achashverosh when he makes Mordechai the viceroy? Vayasar hamelech. He takes off the ring, and what does he do with it? He gives it to Mordechai, right? And when Yosef is made the viceroy, he's put into a chariot, and what do they call? Vayikrolafanav, and what is the chariot called? Next, item 8, Merkevet HaMishnah, the chariot of the viceroy, right? And what happens with Yosef? Vikarulafanov, right? Same phrase, Vikarulafanov, Vikarulafanov. Kocho ye yaselo ish asher hamelech chafetz bikaro. Mordechai Haman is taking Mordechai through the street. Remember, the king has trouble sleeping. Haman walks in. And the king asks Haman, what should I do with somebody that I want to honor? And Haman thinks it's him. And so he says that you should dress the man in royal clothing. and put him on the horse of the king and let him be taken through the street, and let the guy taking him through the street should say, Kocha yeyoselo ish asher hamelech hafeis bikaro. This is what should be done to the man that the king wants to give him honor. All right? And so, but again, v'karu lefanav. What happened instead was that Haman had to lead Mordechai through the street. All right, but anyway, and what happens in the end? Yosef is put in the Merkevet HaMishnah. That's the chariot of the viceroy. In other words, the king has apparently, I would say, a more fancy carriage, and the viceroy has, the king has a Lincoln Continental, and the viceroy has an Oldsmobile, a nice Oldsmobile car. And Mordechai what does it say at the end of the Megillah that Mordechai Yehudi was Mishneh LaMelech Achashverosh? Mordechai the Jew was the viceroy of the king Achashverosh. Okay. Item 9. What did Paro do? Paro made a mishteh. It was mishteh Paro. It was a party. And what did Achashverosh do? Right, that's how the Megillah begins. Asa mishteh. Achashverosh made a party. Later on, he makes another party for Esther. But both these kings like to make parties. Look at item number 10. There are several points in time when Yaakov has to rend his clothing. For example, when he hears about what happened to Yosef. The brothers tell him that Tarof Taraf Yosef. So Yaakov rends his clothing. And if you look across, Esther, Dalet, Perek Aleph, Vayikra Mordechai es begadav. Mordechai rends his clothing. Right? At what time? When he's beginning to fast over the decree of Haman. And Mordechai is very, very concerned about what is going to happen to the Jewish people. So he rends his clothing. What do we read about Yosef? Item number 11. Yosef was Yefei Toar Umare. Yosef was a very handsome man. And what do we read about Esther? V'hanara Yefas Toar V'tovas Mare. And the woman was also of great beauty. Fas Toar V'tovas Mare. Item number 12. V'Yisrael Ohav Es Yosef Mikol Banav. Right, Ki Ben Zekunim Ulo. Yisrael Yaakov loved Yosef from all of his children. He loved Yosef more than anyone. And what do we read about the king and Esther? Right across, Vayehav HaMelech Es Esther. The king loved Esther. All right, so again, something very, another similarity. You look at item number 13. So Mordechai says to Esther, you gotta understand one thing. The life of the Jewish people are on the line. You became a king, perhaps for this reason. You have to see the Hashgacha Pratis over here. And you have to go to the king, even though he didn't call you, right? Esther said, you don't go to the king unless the king calls you. And I haven't been called to the king. And, and the rule is in the court of Achashverosh, if you're not called to go to the king, you put to death. So Mordechai says, you have to go. And so Esther says, I'm going to go. V'chasher shacholti shacholti. And I am sorry. Esther says, kasher avadati avadati. I'm sorry. And Yaakov, when he's persuaded by his children to send Binyamin down to Mitzrayim on their second trip, because Tzofnas Paneach, this tyrant in Egypt, had demanded that if they wanted food to save them from the famine, they should not come again without their younger brother. And Yaakov says to his sons, Vani kasher shecholti shecholti. Okay, I'm going to let him go. And I lost one son. I might lose another son. And if, and Shimon, by the way, already Shimon and Enu, because Yosef, Zofnas Paneach, had taken Shimon as a hostage. So, v'chani kasher shacholti, shacholti, what could I do? Ain breira. But it's a similar phrase, kasher avadati, avadati, v'kasher shacholti, shacholti. 14. Yehuda, so now Yehuda, who took responsibility for Binyamin, and Yosef accuses, Tzofnas Paneach accuses Binyamin of stealing his magic cup, right? And it's found in the luggage of Binyamin. It was put there, it was planted there. And so Yehuda has to stand up for Binyamin. So Vayigash Elav Yehuda, right? And he tells a story about the fact that his father lost one child, and he can't let the, you know, he said, I'll go instead of this child, but ani ki echa uchal v'ra'isi v'ra'ash, ki echa leil avi, rather, he says, how can I go back to my father? Pen ere bara asher yimtzos avi, lest I see the bad situation that my father will be in. I just can't do it. And what does Esther say to Ahasuerus? Ki echacha ucha. So she comes to Ahasuerus finally after the Haman incident, when he goes on the couch and she makes the couch that Esther was sitting on, and she makes the plea to Ahasuerus. You know, we can't even karnu. We've been sold, etc. Echacha uchal v'ra'isi bara'a asher yimtzos emi. It's the same phrase. So again, the same kind of phrase. Now, when Yaakov dies, so he's embalmed, right? He's embalmed. They have to carry him back to Eretz Canaan, and there's going to be 70, the Jews don't have much choice over there. There's going to be 70 days of mourning in Egypt, and the body can't decompose. So for Kavod HaMeis, Yaakov is embalmed, and it says, Kichen Yimla'u Yimei HaChanutim. It took them, I think, 30 days was the number there in the Chumash. That's the amount of days it takes for the embalming process to be completed in Egypt. And in the Esther story, you know, Esther is, there's the contest, the beauty contest, in which Ahasuerus is going to pick the queen, right, queen for life, and they're given, certain, you know, she shachar Hashem b'shem anamar, she shachar Hashem b'psamim, you know, kichein yimlu'u yimei merukehem, the same phrase, kichein yimlu'u yimei merukehem. Yosef, when he gives advice to Paro about what to do, you know, he explains the dreams, the 7 lean years, 7 fat years, and in the 7 fat years, you have to collect all the wheat and make Egypt the warehouse of all the wheat that is in Egypt, and so that the nation, people from all over could come, you'll make the country rich. So he says, "Biavkeid Amelach Pikidim." Right, he should appoint officers. V'yikmitzu es kol ochel. They should take all the food of the seven fat years, prosperous years. V'itava davar b'nei Paro, and Paro liked the idea. And when Ahasuerus was missing Vashti, right after he had Vashti executed. Right, and he's depressed, and he wants another queen. So his advisors tell him, "V'yafkei Hamelech Pekidim." He should appoint officers, and they're going to do a search all over his 127 provinces for the most beautiful women to bring to the king. V'yikmitzuas kol na'ara, like v'yikmitzuas kol ochel, v'yikmitzuas kol na'ara. They should gather all the women. V'yitav ha'davar be'enei Hamelech. And the thing found favor, the idea found favor in the king's eyes. So And if you look in the Megillah, there are more examples. There are many examples of where the story of Yosef and the story of Mordechai and Esther are parallel to each other just by the text of the Bible. And one of the things that, you know, I learned from Rav Meidan and Rav Yoel Ben Nun and Yoni Grossman and several of the teachers in Yeshivat Har Etzion in the Herzog Institute is that you should pay attention to phrases in the Bible. And when you have phrases in the Bible that seem to be lifted, and you know, and I would suggest that when Mordechai and Esther sat down to write the Megillah, they didn't put these phrases in by accident. They lifted the phrases out of the Yosef story. And they were giving a message. They were telling us something. You know, and the question is, what are they telling us? So in Yirmiyahu it says, Ko Amar Hashem. That's the next item there. Kol Barama Nishma Nehi Bechi Samarim Rachel Mivaka. But now Rachel is crying for her children. Me'ana Lehinachem. She won't be comforted. And Ko Amar Hashem Ki Yesh Tikva Lachriseich. Right, and you know Yesh Tikva V'Shavu Vanim Legvulam. Your children will return to the land. Right, that's what Yirmiyahu says. All right, and so what is the point of that? Rachel, so what is the role of Rachel in the Tanakh? So you might recall that Rachel dies, and Yaakov buries her on the road, wherever that may be. You know, so there's Kever Rachel in Beit Lechem. There's another place north of Jerusalem where there is a reference made by Shmuel that you're going to see two guys at Kever Rachel in some place north of Jerusalem. And the question is how you read that pasuk, but the location of Kever Rachel, let's say, is in the Tanakh. It's not 100% clear exactly where it is. But there's Kever, and you see, the truth is that Kever Rachel being where it's located, I once heard a shir, I think by Rav Meidan also many years ago, but you know, you understand Kever, the idea of Kever Rachel being in a certain place. So what does the Medrash say? That when the children of Israel go into the diaspora, they should pass by the grave of Rachel and pray. But where did they go into the diaspora? They went to Bavel. Which direction is Bavel? It's north. Does mean that Nebuchadnezzar forced them out of the land of Israel, put them in exile, and said, "Okay, but I'll let you go south for you know by foot for a day or two, and you go pray at Kever Rachel, then you're going to Babel." Or is it more likely that he took them north, and Kever Rachel actually is north of Jerusalem, and that's where they prayed? If that medrash works out, because it's a little bit difficult to see Kever Rachel being in the south. Where it is. Now, I'm not saying, by the way, that Kever Rachel is not that. That's not Kever Rachel. That place that we all go daven to is a very special place. Obviously, Jews have been praying there for a couple of thousand years. But I'm just anyway. So what's the role of Rachel? Rachel worries about the Jewish people in the diaspora, and one might suggest that is the role of the children of Rachel. That is the legacy that they got from their mother. So think about Yosef for a second. Yosef is in Mitzrayim, and Yosef tells his brothers at the end, after Yaakov dies, he says it several times. He tells them, "Listen, it's not you didn't do anything wrong. God put me here to play the role, and I'm able to rescue the family." That's the role Yosef plays. But Yosef also plays another role, and it's the most, a very significant role. At the end of Yosef's life, he calls in his brothers, and he makes them swear. Right? Vayashba Yosef esechav lemar, pakod yivkod elokim eschem v'alisim esmosai mizeh. He also says, Yosef says, pakod yivkod elokim eschem. You know, understand that God is taking you out of Egypt. Right? God is taking you out of Egypt. And you have to you have to believe that. You can't enter into this, however long we're going to be stuck in this land, without the belief that you have something to look forward to. There you have freedom. And you know that when God the Medrash had, we were told that the Jewish people took the Atzmos Yosef, the remains of Yosef, maybe all the other Shvatim with them. And the Atzmos Yosef, Hayom Ra'ah Vayanos. What did when the sea split? What did it see? It saw the Medrash says the Atzmos Yosef, the remains of Yosef. Yosef was the inspiration of the Jewish people to leave Egypt. What did God say to Moshe when in part of his long set of instructions to Moshe and the debate back and forth whether Moshe was going to take them out? God says to Moshe, Pakod Pakarati, Pakod Pakarati. I remember. And I think it's Rashi or the Ramban who quotes the Medrash, that Yosef gave the Jewish people a slogan. Whoever, Vayashva Yosef is a chevle mar pakod yivkod alokim eschem, I want you to remember one thing, that when the Redeemer will come, whoever that Redeemer will be, he will say pakod yivkod. He will say, it's Rashi or the Ramban who says, it was the slogan. The Jewish people were waiting for someone to come and say, Pakod Pokarati, Pakod Pokarati. That is what was happening over there. And so God says to Moshe, Pakod Pokarati. And Moshe comes and he says, this is what God told me, Pakod Pokarati. And the Jewish people understood, they knew now that the Redeemer had come. So Yosef understood what his role was. His role was to make sure that the Jewish people would go out of Egypt. That's why he was sent to Egypt. It wasn't only to feed the Jewish people when there was a famine in the land, and they would come to Egypt, and they would live in the five towns, right, in Eretz Goshen. They would live in Lawrence, back Lawrence, and they would live in the best. No, they'd live in Savion. They'd live in the best neighborhoods. And see, I didn't say great, Nick. I was being polite. But they would be living in the best. They lived in. That's only part of the story. The real part of the story is that Yosef was the one who was the inspiration for redemption. And if you understand that, and you understand that Ish Yehudi Haya B'Shushan HaBiro, Shmo Mordechai Ben Yair Ben Shimi Ben Kish, Ish Yemini, right? So Rabbi Yeshua Ben Levi says in the Gemara Maseches Megillah, Ovid Mi Binyamin V'Imo Mi Yehuda. One opinion is his father was from Shevet Binyamin. His father was from Shevet Binyamin. You know, Ishimini Binyamin, Mordechai HaYehudi from Shevet Yehuda. But that's his mother. But he was from Shevet Binyamin. And Rabbi Yochanan says, of Avimo Binyamin, right? His mother and father, he was totally from Shevet Binyamin on both sides of the family. And he was called Yehudi, right? Ki kofar b'avodah zarah, because he denied idol worship. So what the Medrash means, Boneh shel Rachel, Nisan Shaveh, Gdulasim Shaveh, that the role of the children of Rachel is to worry about the Jewish people in the diaspora. That's the role of the children of Rachel. And that's the role that Yosef, the son of Rachel, assumed. And that's the role that Mordechai and Esther of Shevet Binyamin assumed in Shushan HaBira, that the role of the children of Rachel, and that's why Rachel is Mevakal Boneha, because Rachel is the one who will not be comforted until the Jewish people are taken out of the diaspora. So that's one thought. When you read the Megillah carefully and you note, and I'm telling you there are more examples, the parallel texts between these two stories, it means, you know, from my perspective, that Mordechai and Yosef, that Mordechai and Esther looked at the Yosef story and they wrote the Megillah with a message for the Jewish people for all time. I want to say something else about the Megillah, just for a few more minutes, about the last parak in the Megillah. And the last parak in the Megillah, you know, the Megillah, ultimately, it's a story that we read because it has a message for us. And all the information in the Megillah is part of that story. So you have to read the whole story, the king, the pap, the parties, Vashti, Esther, Haman, you know, Harvona, whatever you read in the Megillah, it's all part of that narrative. What is very perplexing to me is the last parak in the Megillah. V'yasam hamelech achashverosh mas al ha'aretz v'iyei hayam, right? The king levied taxes on the land and on the islands, you know, all of his provinces. And then the Megillah says, and the rest of the greatness of Mordechai, halo haim ksuvim, bedivrei hayamim, lemalchei paras amadai. What is the point of that chapter? What is the point of the chapter? In other words, the whole story, the story ends in Perek Tes. You know, the Haman was hanged, the Jewish people celebrate, you know, Mishloach Manos, Ishlareyehu, Matanos Levyonim, the, you know, the all the wonderful things about Purim. What's the message for us in the story about Ahasuerus's tax policy? Who cares? So I would like to suggest that it's a very important part of the story of the Megillah. Because the story can't end unless we understand what the root cause of what happened and how the Jewish people almost were eradicated by Ahasuerus at the advice of Haman. So how does the story begin? The story of the Megillah begins with Ahasuerus making a party, right? And if you read the Megillah, Yahur, Karpas, Utchelet, the beautiful banquet hall, beautiful golden goblets and wine, and you know the best wine of Psagot, of Carmel, of Wachila, whatever you like, the best wine of Paras Amadai, a party for everyone in all 127 provinces, a party that lasts forever and ever and ever, and then another party for a week for the people of Shushan Habira. Right, that's what happens. Now, if you know a little, we don't know exactly which Persian king Ahasuerus was, you know, whether he was Xerxes, Artaxerxes, but we know that the Persian kings, and during the time of the Persian Empire, he ruled over 127 provinces. How did he rule over 127 provinces? How did he get so big? There were a lot of wars, right? He fought a lot of wars. The Persians were conquerors, but wars are not cheap. Wars are very, very expensive, right? You gotta feed. I don't know if he paid his troops any salaries, but you gotta feed the troops, right? You have to make sure that they have weapons. You have to make the weapons. You have to mine. You know, if they made the weapons out of steel, they have to mine the ore. You have to have boats that travel great distances. You have to, you know, it's an expensive thing. So, in the second parak, when Haman becomes the viceroy of the king, right? Yidal HaMelech Ahasuerus is Haman ben Hamdasa. Haman goes to the king, and Haman is very, very troubled by the fact that Mordechai won't bow to him. It bothers him so much. So Haman comes up with an idea that he wants to kill all the Jews, men, women, and children, everyone. Now, even to a, you know, whatever kind of king Ahasuerus was, whether he was a Melech Tipesh or a Melech Chacham, it's very, very hard, even for the biggest of anti-Semites. The worst of anti-Semites want to destroy men, women, children. So we talk about Hitler, Yimach Shemo, and the Nazis, or you talk about Hamas, Yimach Shemo. They don't care. Like, they want to behead children. They want to kill everybody. But your average anti-Semite doesn't like Jews for whatever reason. Jews, you know, I once remember I'm on a plane, and I'm sitting next to a guy, and some Haredi Jew gets on the plane and walks to the back. And the man, I was wearing a baseball hat. The man next to me says, and he says, you know, those Jews, I could smell them a mile away. I said, really? I said, you smell anything? He said, you smell anything? He says, no. Then I take off my hat. And I said, you see, I'm a Jew. So you can't smell all of us a mile away, you know. It's just, you know, there's a certain thing about anti-Semites. Yeah, I don't think that man would ever think of murdering Jews and committing genocide. There are a lot of anti-Semites in the world. They don't like us, you know, I mean, but, you know, even the, They don't. It's generally not a policy to commit genocide. You know, you have people like Stalin, and you have people like Bogdan Khmelnytsky. You have those kind of people who are prepared to kill Jews. You know, if Khmelnytsky had had his way, you know, Khmelnytsky during the 1648 and 1649 Cossack Rebellion, there are estimates that he may have killed up to 1 million Jews. And imagine if that, they might be exaggerated, those estimates. But he killed a good 100,000 Jews, and you just, they didn't have gas chambers, they didn't have trains, they did it with their swords. I mean, you know, it's incredible. There are people like that. But most average anti-Semites, they'll persecute Jews, they'll make rules against the Jews, they'll make life difficult, they'll put a tax on the Jews, whatever they're going to do, they'll put the Jews in ghettos. So Ahasuerus was such an anti-Semite. Haman comes to him, and he says, Yesh no am echad b'fuzar b'forad b'ben amim b'doseihem shones you know b'sdinei amelech einam elsim im amal amelech tov yichosev largam. Don't the king kill him? Achashverosh, his eyes pop out. He says, "You got to be killing. You're kidding. You want me to commit genocide?" So Amon has his trump card is in his back pocket. V'aseres alafim kikar kesef eshkol al yedei oseihem lacha. To put in the Ginzei HaMelech. Now, we're talking. Ahasuerus is bankrupt. He makes parties. He makes the party for Esther. He makes the party for many days. He's fighting wars. He has no money. He's bankrupt. He is bankrupt. Now, Haman is going to get him tons of gold from all the Jews. You know, look what the Nazis did. Right? The Nazis, they melted Jews' teeth into gold bar. They, you know, look what they did. They plundered all the property. They all the art, you know the many stories about all the art that the Nazis stole. They were making themselves rich off of the Jews. And Ahasuerus desperately needed the money. So Ahasuerus agrees. And he gives Haman the authority. So when Mordechai becomes, so Mordechai and Esther are successful in foiling the plot of Haman and getting Haman killed and allowing the Jews to rise up against Haman's allies and to fight whatever battles and to take revenge. But the question is that enough to end the story? Or do you have to do one other thing? You have to know what the possibilities are. So we now have a new possibility. A reason to kill Jews is for their money, because the kingdom is bankrupt. And so even if you don't want to kill them, you want their money. And so you'll take an excuse to kill them. So when Mordechai becomes viceroy and prime minister of Shushan HaBira, Mordechai wants to know that at least when he leaves the world, he's going to leave the treasure chest of the king full. So they won't have that excuse. Vayosam HaMelech HaChashverosh Mas Al Haaretz V'Al Iyei Hayam V'Chol Parashas Gedulas Mordechai Halohem K'suvim V'Divrei Hayam V'Shel Malchei Paras HaMordechai. Who gave him that advice? The greatness of Mordechai. Mordechai said, okay, we're going to have a tax policy, levy taxes, fill the coffers of your kingdom with money. So the excuse that you'll get the money from the Jews, you have to kill the Jews to get the money, that excuse will be gone, finished. That's why we have the last chapter in the Megillah. Vayosam HaMelech HaChashverosh Mas Al Haaretz V'Al Iyei Hayam, because Mordechai has to finish the job. The job wasn't done only killing Haman and his allies. The job has to be done that at least when I leave this world, I have done the maximum to make sure that the excuse that Haman had to persuade the king to murder the Jews will be absent.